Welcome to this archived LDN Research Trust conference presentation. We hope you enjoy it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. I am Dr. Darren Ingalls. I am a naturopathic physician in Connecticut and California in the United States. And today I'm going to be talking to you about the use of low-dose naltrexone in the treatment of Lyme disease. So just to give you some basic background information about Lyme disease itself is a bacterial infection, and it's caused by an organism called Borrelia burgdorferi, at least here in the United States. Around the world, there are actually many, many species of this organism that can cause Lyme disease. So the species that we see here in the United States are a little bit different than those that are found in Europe, which are different than those found in Asia and so forth. So, you know, be aware that it's not just one organism that's causing this illness, but rather a series of multiple species that are responsible for causing, you know, very similar symptoms. And this organism is transmitted through mostly a tick bite. However, there has been some recent research to suggest that ticks are not the only carriers of Lyme disease anymore. We can find this with mosquitoes, fleas, and potentially any other biting insect that shares blood, since it is a blood-borne pathogen. So, you know, you'll hear about potentially people who get exposure to Lyme disease that live in areas of the world where it's not really known to having a lot of Lyme disease, only because they don't necessarily have a lot of ticks. And I think that explains why we're seeing this really epidemic of Lyme around the world, is that it's in areas that aren't necessarily tick-infested areas, but potentially have mosquitoes and other biting insects. So that seems to explain why we have, you know, this really now worldwide epidemic. And, you know, we have at least 300,000 new cases of Lyme disease in the United States alone, really affecting millions of people worldwide. I think in Europe, I read there's about 68,000 new cases each year. So it is something that has become a problem really throughout the world. And the symptoms of Lyme disease vary quite a bit. Classic Lyme disease is characterized by what they call a bullseye rash. So this is a rash that when you look at it, it kind of looks like a target where you'll see this series of concentric rings alternating with kind of red and white. Excuse me. And headaches are very common, high fever, joint pain, muscle aches, numbness and tingling in the arms and hands and feet, sometimes Bell's palsy, which is paralysis on one side of the face, brain fog, memory problems, mood changes, and really dozens more. Up to 150 different symptoms have been associated with causing Lyme disease, and that's part of what can make it difficult for your physician to diagnose it. We call Lyme disease the great imitator, and we call it that because it really looks like a lot of other diseases and illnesses. So I gave you a short list of some of the things that are probably the most commonly misdiagnosed conditions. Multiple sclerosis is very commonly misdiagnosed. And multiple sclerosis is really a definition. If you talk to a neurologist about, okay, well, you know, I've got MS, but what causes it? You know, they're really going to shrug their shoulders, but there's good research to suggest that Lyme disease can be a trigger. Perhaps not the only trigger, but at least a trigger for MS. Other conditions like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, again, these are very generic diagnoses that don't necessarily have a definitive cause. However, Lyme disease can be a cause for them. ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's, mono, Alzheimer's, and again, many, many others. There are probably at least 100 different conditions that have been associated with Lyme disease. So if you've ever been diagnosed with something that doesn't have a clear definition and nobody really knows what's causing it, it always makes me very suspicious that Lyme might be part of the problem. And one of the other symptoms that's very classically related to Lyme, and as far as we know, really only Lyme, is you can get what's called wandering pain. And what that means is that you can get pain in your right hip one day, and the next day it's in your left foot, and the next day it's in your right shoulder, and it seems to wander throughout your body. As far as we know, there's no other condition or organism that causes that specific symptom. So for people who experience this wandering pain, that's a pretty big red flag that Lyme might be part of the clinical picture. So Lyme is commonly misdiagnosed as some other condition, or in many cases, not diagnosed at all. And part of the reason that that happens is the testing that's available right now is really inadequate. And what that means is that we don't have a good test available that directly measures whether the organism is present and active in your body. Most of the tests that are available are antibody tests. So what they're looking at is the immune response to the exposure. So theoretically, if you got bit by a tick that carried Lyme disease and you had antibodies in your blood, that would just tell us that you've been exposed. But if your immune system did what we wanted it to do, it would make antibodies, your immune system would eradicate the infection before it ever became a problem, and that would be the end of that. But when you do a test looking for antibodies, because the antibodies are there, someone might say, oh, well, you have antibodies, therefore you have Lyme disease. And that's not necessarily true either. So we have to take a look at what we see on paper versus what we see sitting in front of us. And when we have evidence on paper that there's been exposure and you have the clinical symptoms of Lyme disease, that's how we determine that Lyme is part of what's going on for you. You know, Lyme disease is a clinical diagnosis. What that means, it's really based on your symptoms. So even according to the Center for Disease Control here in the United States, the test is never designed to be a diagnostic. It was really designed to help for surveillance, to monitor people who had known Lyme disease. It's really, though, based on the type of symptoms you have and if you live in an area that happens to be endemic for Lyme disease. So the testing, again, is really just a way that we can help determine if you've had exposure. But at the end of the day, our diagnosis is really based on the kind of symptoms that you had. There are new emerging tests coming out that are hopefully going to be better indicators about what's active in your body, but they're still, I think, in their early stages, and the reliability of these tests has not really yet been determined. So, you know, people who have these often vague symptoms can go many, many years without ever getting diagnosed. And part of the problem we see in the United States is if people live in an area outside of the Northeast or the central Midwest where Lyme is endemic, it's really out of doctors' minds, so they don't ever bother to even test people for it. And even if they do, and the test comes back negative, they said, oh, well, your test is negative, so you don't have Lyme. But again, I think this is a gross misinterpretation of what this test means. And false negative tests are actually quite common in the Lyme world. So it's not uncommon sometimes that we test people multiple times over a series of months to try and pick up on whether there is any indication that they've had that exposure. But keep in mind that one negative test, does not necessarily exclude the possibility of having had Lyme. So the initial problem with Lyme is the infection itself, and that's where you get those acute symptoms of headache and fever and joint pain and numbness and tingling. But as time passes, and particularly if that organism was never treated right away, it has the possibility of turning into something different. And what that something different is really an autoimmune problem. So Lyme is not the only organism that can do this. We know from the research that many microbes have the capacity to trigger an autoimmune problem. And that autoimmunity may not necessarily be lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. It can sometimes be something even more generic and vague than that. So when you do blood tests that we are typically run for autoimmune disease, many of these tests often come back negative. But the nature of what Lyme is doing to the immune system is still triggering a reaction that your immune system's confused, and instead of fighting the organism, it's interacting with your own connective tissue. So many of these symptoms that we see with long-term Lyme is related to to this autoimmune process. So this is where conventional medicine often fails, is that they don't recognize that, you know, Lyme is triggering this autoimmune process. So the conventional treatment is typically 21 days of doxycycline. This is an antibiotic that's known to kill Lyme. And at the end of that 21 days, whether you feel different or not, you're just done with treatment. And in many ways, that doesn't make a lot of sense logically. Lyme happens to be a very slow-growing organism. And the way that doxycycline works is it doesn't actually kill the organism directly. What it does is it stops the organism from replicating. And that's a little bit of a different process. So what that means is that the antibiotic really only works when the organism is in a replication cycle. And unlike regular bacteria like that cause a sinus infection that replicate every 20 minutes, antibiotics can be very effective because these organisms are constantly trying to reproduce. But Lyme disease can replicate as long as every 16 days, which is far longer than every 20 minutes. So that length of time in its process certainly changes the way that these antibiotics affect the ability to eradicate the infection. So beyond just the 21 days of doxycycline, you know, that's where conventional medicine sort of stops with their treatment protocol. And often that lack of recognition that it's causing this autoimmune problem. So for people who end up with what we call chronic Lyme disease, or what's really now been coined post-Lyme syndrome, there really isn't any conventional treatment offerings. Antibiotics have not been shown to be very helpful when people get to this stage of illness. And I think this is where LDN becomes extremely effective, because what we're really trying to do now is modulate the way that the immune system is behaving. If you think about autoimmunity as a whole, it really is an overreaction to these various stimuli out there in the world. So ultimately what we want to do is we want to change the way that the immune system reacts to these different things. And that really includes a very comprehensive program of not just just the LDN itself, but we want to look at someone's diet. Are they eating anything that might be undermining their immune system? We want to look at intestinal health. You know, 80% of your immune function comes from the gut. So if the gut isn't functioning well, the immune system doesn't function well. So looking at, you know, are people having regular bowel movements? Do they get constipation? Do they get diarrhea? Do they get gas? Do they get bloating? All of these factors actually become very important in controlling the immune system. And, of course, good sleep, good deep sleep. This is the time where the body has a chance to repair and restore itself. So we want to make sure that people are getting good quality sleep. Exercise is important, getting the body moving, getting blood moving. This is what helps oxygenate the tissue, remove waste products. All that's very important for feeling well and helping the immune system. Detoxification, if people have a poor time of clearing toxins from their body, that can have a detrimental effect on the immune system. And environmental control. So all these other things in their world that undermine the immune system, whether it's mold, pollen allergy, cat, dust, dog, any of these things can be a distraction to the immune system and affect the way that the immune system responds to a pathogen like Lyme disease. So we really have to look at this whole picture of every person in being able to help move forward and get past Lyme. But again, I think LDN can become a very important factor in this, because it does help alter the way the immune system responds. And we'll talk a little bit in just a minute about TH1 and TH2 responses, which is the way that we're trying to manipulate how the immune system is responding. You're probably already very well aware of how low-dose naltrexone works. You know, it's an opioid antagonist, but at low doses, it actually enhances your own internal opioid production, and that produces a lot of good beneficial effects for the body. That short-term blocking of the opioid receptors for 4 to 6 hours actually leads to an increased level of endogenous opioids, so that's what your body is naturally making on its own for up to 20 hours. So we're really getting this sustained long-term effect of these opioids, these natural opioids, by just using, you know, these very low doses of that opioid antagonist. It's been used off-label for numerous conditions, including cancer and fibromyalgia and MS, Crohn's disease, different types of pain syndromes, and even autism. But again, if you look at that list, you'll see some of those conditions on there do overlap with Lyme. So I've given you some research studies here that you're welcome to peruse at your convenience, but I just wanted to point out that, you know, this is something that has been studied. And I think when we look at a lot of the conditions that has been studied for, such as there's a study here on chronic pain, they've done research on MS, they've actually done a few studies on MS, they've even done studies here on fibromyalgia. We even find that LDN has been used in immune modulation, and I think this particular study is one of the more interesting studies because this suggests that there is a much broader application to using LDN outside of these individual conditions, because immune modulation becomes important for various other types of immune dysfunction. We see that, you know, using low-dose naltrexone can help improve quality of life, and again, there's some research studies here on using it for Crohn's disease. LDN has not been specifically used in Lyme disease, but I, along with many other practitioners, have used this with Lyme disease and have had very good clinical success. And again, I think the way that it's working is that we're helping modulate this Th1-Th2 balance. So you're probably not a professional immunologist, but to understand what the mechanism is, Th1 stands for T helper cell 1, and T helper cells are really the conductors of the immune system. So Th1 cells are really the cells that are most responsible for being direct scavengers in the body. So when you get exposed to a virus or a bacteria, these are the cells that are going to go right after it and try and get rid of it right away. The T helper 2 cells are really more responsible for antibody production. So they themselves don't directly do anything. They need a signal from other parts of the immune system to be activated. And so as antibody production increases, this is the part that can help affect microbes on the back end of an infection. But this antibody production is also what's involved in allergy and autoimmunity. And we like to think of it kind of like a seesaw. As Th1 goes up, Th2 goes down, and as Th2 goes up, Th1 goes down. It's actually far more complex than that, but just to kind of understand what's happening, that's a very simplistic way of think of it. So ultimately, what we really want for most people is to have this balance where you're probably in a slightly higher Th1 state than Th2. But what happens for a lot of people with various autoimmune conditions, including Lyme, is the Th2 system is very stimulated and the Th1 tends to be much lower. So, you know, LDN has an excellent safety profile. It's very well tolerated. Outside of some changes in sleep patterns, or sometimes people report that they have really odd dreams for a while, LDN tends to be very, very well tolerated and is therefore very well indicated for people with Lyme disease. So let me present a couple of cases of Lyme disease that I've worked with to kind of illustrate how LDN can be used. The first case I have here is a 47-year-old female who had a 2-year history of joint pain, fatigue, abdominal pain, insomnia, and brain fog. And she had been to see another functional medicine doctor here in the United States. And when several tests were run, she was found that her inflammatory markers were quite elevated. But all of her other blood tests for autoimmunity, including those for lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, all of those tests were really negative. She also had some stool testing done and other blood tests done. And what the stool test found is that she had a lot of yeast overgrowing in her gut. So she was treated with antifungals, which really helped her gastrointestinal symptoms and even helped her brain fog a little bit. She also had additional diet changes, which further helped reduce her joint pain and improved her gastrointestinal symptoms. But after about 6 months, she felt like she was hitting a wall and her progress really plateaued. During this time, there was really no change in her sleep pattern. She still complained of insomnia. she finally, her doctor decided that there was something else going on, so she had follow-up testing for Lyme disease, and she did have both IgG and IgM antibodies to Lyme, which even by the most conservative assessments, this is a positive test to Lyme disease. This particular doctor does not specialize in Lyme disease and therefore was referred to me for evaluation and treatment. When I met with her, I immediately started her on an herbal protocol to treat active Lyme, and I used another therapy called low-dose immunotherapy to help alter the way her immune system was responding to Lyme disease. And over the next 6 weeks, her fatigue and her brain fog started to improve. She also noticed that her joint pain was getting a little better, but her sleep was still not good. And what that meant for her is she had difficulty falling asleep, would wake up multiple times in the night, and had difficulty falling back asleep. So I decided to start her on LDN 1 milligram at bedtime. And for me, this is actually very standard. I like to start with low doses and work my way up to find, you know, I want to find the minimum dose that's going to give the most benefit. So after 2 weeks, there was really no improvement in her sleep pattern or any of her other symptoms, so I increased her dose up to 2 milligrams. After she was on the 2 milligrams for a few weeks, she reported her sleep was a little bit better, her joint pain was a little better, but she did tell me that she felt like she was sleeping deeper and longer than she was before. So after 2 more weeks, I increased her LDN again up to 3 milligrams, and 3 milligrams seemed to be the magic number for her. At that point, she started falling asleep easier. She was consistently sleeping through the night. And on top of that, we started seeing other systemic symptoms improve, such as her digestion was better, her bowel movements were more regular, and even her energy was better. And she continued to improve overall after 3 months. She still was getting a little bit of joint pain in her shoulders and her hands. She wasn't having the systemic joint pain anymore. It really was now confined to just a couple places. So I felt like, you know, the LDN had made really a big difference for her, and we decided to just bump it up a little bit. So we increased her dose again from 3 milligrams up to 3.5 milligrams. 1 month later, after being on the 3.5 milligrams, she was really sleeping well. Her hands and her shoulders weren't hurting anymore. Her grip strength was better. She was able to do all of her activities really without any kind of physical limitation. Her digestion continued to do well. She wasn't having brain fog. She didn't have any abdominal pain. In fact, she actually went on a ski trip for her husband for 2 weeks, and she was skiing 6-8 hours a day and really didn't have any joint or muscle complaints afterwards. So we've continued on the 3.5 milligrams at bedtime, and during that time, she's been doing so well, we've actually been able to reduce other things that she was taking, so several nutritional supplements and herbs. And we did keep her on just a couple of maintenance herbs for keeping the inflammation under control, just because really she's a very active person with, you know, physical sports and gardening, and we just wanted to make sure that she didn't have any kind of secondary joint or muscle problems. But we will probably start to discontinue those over the next couple of months if she continues to do well. So the second case I want to present to you, this is a 40-year-old male, and in June of 2002, he started to experience migraine headaches, pain in his spine. He had a very high fever of 104 Fahrenheit, 40 degrees Celsius, and numbness and tingling in his arms and legs. He was actually on his way to the hospital, and a friend noticed that he had a big bullseye rash on the back of his leg. So he didn't know that he had the rash. Someone else pointed out, so the rash is a dead giveaway that it's Lyme. He happens to live in an endemic area of the Northeast United States that has a lot of Lyme disease, so this is a very classic case of Lyme disease. So he was started on 21 days of doxycycline, and really after 4 days, his symptoms were completely better. But 8 months later, he started to experience numbness and tingling in his arms and legs, and started to have the spine pain again. He started on doxycycline again, but had no improvement after 1 month of treatment. And over the course of the next 8 to 9 months, he had actually changed different antibiotics, different combination of antibiotics. And not only were things not getting better, they were actually getting worse. And the antibiotics were starting to take a toll on his gut. He started having a lot of gastrointestinal problems, specifically loose stool, abdominal pain, anorexia. So he was having a hard time, you know, just eating, felt nauseous all the time. I think as he described to me, he felt like a chemo patient. Just the gut was completely wiped out. He happened to have met another doctor in New York City named Dr. Zhang, a Chinese medical doctor who developed a Chinese herbal protocol on treating Lyme. So he started on that regimen, and fairly quickly, joint pain and the neuropathy started to gradually improve. After almost a year, his progress started to stall, so he stopped taking the Chinese herbs, and he transitioned over to a different herbal protocol. There's another very popular herbal protocol called the Cowden protocol that's used with Lyme disease, and therefore he switched over to that. He did notice improvement again, and the joint pain really cleared up. However, the neuropathy was still persistent, and for him, it was really numbness in his left arm and both his legs. He decided to meet with his neurologist who did an MRI, which did show there was some demyelination in the brain, which is consistent with multiple sclerosis. And as I mentioned earlier, MS and Lyme disease are commonly misdiagnosed or confused together. And on an MRI, the lesions that are observed with MS are identical to the lesions you would observe with Lyme. So we are quite sure that the lesions that are seen with him are really related to Lyme. MS is the official diagnosis, but we're quite sure it's Lyme-related. So I started him on LDN 1 milligram at bedtime for 2 weeks. So after 1 milligram, there was really no change in symptoms, so I increased his dose up to 2 milligrams. Again, after another 2 weeks, there was no change, so I did a bigger jump and increased it to 4 milligrams. After he'd been on 4 milligrams, he did have slight improvement in the neuropathy, but it was still there. So he's a big guy. He weighs 230 pounds. So I'm not sure what that is in kilograms, but we went ahead and increased him up to 6 milligrams. After he had been on 6 milligrams, he complained that he was having some difficulty sleeping for a couple of weeks. But after that couple of weeks, his sleep pattern basically started to normalize again, and we just kept him at that dose. He's continued with the 6 milligrams at bedtime, and his neuropathy continues to improve. He's able to walk without tripping as much. It feels like his balance is better. So before starting the LDN, he was tripping all the time, had fallen multiple times, tripped over furniture, felt very clumsy, and it was really just becoming a problem in his life. So having been on the 6 milligrams for a bit, he noticed that all of that had markedly improved. And he was sleeping much better, and his wife even noticed that he wasn't snoring as he was before. He still has neuropathy today, but it continues to get better. He's been on the 6 milligrams of LDN for about 4 months, and we're going to continue to monitor his progress. But the trend is such that, you know, things keep getting better. And with LDN in some patients, 3 months tends to be kind of the magic number, which, you know, you really want to give it the full dose to see how people respond. But I have seen people where sometimes they do need a bit longer before we see the full extent of what it's going to do for them. So our plan is really to give it 6 months, see how he's progressing, and hopefully we'll see the neuropathy continue to improve. So this slide just represents my dosing regimen of how I do it. Again, I like to start with 1 milligram at bedtime, and I'll increase by 1 milligram every 2 weeks up to 6 milligrams. I do not have patients that I've used more than 6 milligrams, and I find, as I've listed here, that women seem to do best at 3 milligrams. Men often do best at 4.5 milligrams, and children often do best between 1 and 2 milligrams. And these certainly aren't hard and fast rules, but this is what I tend to find operates best for people in this, you know, either gender or age group. I've actually used LDN quite a bit in children with autism. That's a fairly large part of my practice as well. And again, I think with autism, there is that element of immune dysfunction and autoimmunity that LDN tends to do very, very well by. So just to wrap it up, I just wanted to give you some information here. I do have an upcoming book called The Lyme Solution that will be released in April of 2018. And I do talk about low-dose naltrexone as a treatment for Lyme disease, as well as many other ways of managing in Lyme, including dietary changes, herbal protocols, and lifestyle things that people can do. So this is designed really to be a self-help guide for people with Lyme disease so that they can help overcome their Lyme disease on their own. And then I do have a chapter that talks specifically about how to work with healthcare providers to do other types of therapies that can be beneficial. So all of my information's here. If you'd like to follow me, we send out regular updates on information about Lyme disease and other things in the naturopathic world. So I appreciate your time listening in on this webinar today, and I hope you find the information very useful, and I wish you good success in your health. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this presentation. All past conference presentations can be found on our website, www.ldnresearchtrust.org.